All right, welcome into another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Your co-host, Jason Williams, my partner in crime, my co-host, Sharon Coolidge, is on vacation this week. She'll be back next week, and I know she's chomping at the bit to get back because she's been texting me and asking about who we're going to have as our next guest and all that. Right now, I welcome in another partner in crime on our politics team here at the Enquirer, Cincinnati.com, Scott Wortman, who covers regional politics and Hamilton County government and is right in the middle of all kinds of huge stories. Scott, thanks for jumping in the booth here.
Thanks for having me. Love being a part of this team, man.
Yeah, love having you. And welcome back, by the way. We had you on a few months ago when we were back ahead of the big federal gerrymandering case, and great insight and great reader response to that. So
we also talked about my cat.
We did talk about your cat, Sister Betty Lou.
People love that cat.
How's she doing?
Oh, she's doing great. Yeah.
best pet name ever.
She's got quite the life.
Scott, you're right in the middle of covering the banks project, and obviously it's been such a big story in Cincinnati really for two decades, and here in recent months because of the music venue and the moving of Hilltop Concrete and the deal with the riverfront land where they're at right now to move away from there to create space for the Bengals parking to then ultimately create space for the outdoor music venue. And so it's prompted us to really it's really a big taxpayer watchdog story. It's a transparency story, and Sherry and I have talked about some of the transparency things with the banks. But it's also prompted you to look at to take a look at how much money we or the taxpayers of Hamilton County have paid just in legal fees alone on the banks. And that you got a story coming up on that on Cincinnati.com. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, that's
supposed to be due. That's due out as you listen to this on Wednesday, as we come out with the podcast on Wednesday morning around lunchtime. This story should be posting sometime around that time.
Okay. Well, at the heart of right from the beginning, when the stadium deals for Paul Brown Stadium and Great American Ballpark were being brokered, at the heart of every deal then and since then has been attorney Tom Gableman. The county contracted with him at the start to be their point man, their representative, the broker of these deals. And he's been there ever since. And while the banks, whether they've been successful or not, that's a matter of perspective. Some business owners are disappointed with the foot traffic, but it's been a pretty good business for Gableman's firms. He's been with two firms since then, and based on open records requests that we've gotten back, he's made at least $19 million, or his firms have made $19 million off representing the county. Actually, by his estimation, it's actually $21 million. It's been a little bit more, according to his count. Whether he's worth it, he says he's worth it. He says that he's been able to broker 125 separate agreements among private entities, city and county, which have not gotten along at all on how to develop the riverfront. He says he's worth it. Now, whether he is or not, I mean, what would happen at the banks if he wasn't there? That's pure speculation, and there's really no way to prove, how much he's actually done there. But he has, I can say, anything that's gone on at the banks, he's been front and center. Like, as he said, that's his life's work.
Do you think that? How do you think this story is going to be taken when knowing how big of a lightning rod those stadiums have been with taxpayers, and let's be honest, the banks, and I've it's pretty much half done, and it's been a long process, now 11 years in the making since they started the development. And we say the banks, that's the development between the Reds and Bengals Stadium. Certainly there are some positive things going on there, but there's also been a lot of things that haven't been so positive. A lot of restaurants have come and gone. A lot of empty plots so far or pads of land, that, and it's just been a slow process. Considering all that, when people see $21 million alone have gone to essentially one lawyer, and who it's been gone to his law firm, but there's been one lawyer, Tom Gableman, who's worked on this project on behalf of the taxpayers of Hamilton County. What are your thoughts? I mean, how do you think people are going to take this?
Well, I mean, I think there will be outraged, not necessarily because he'll point out that it's a fraction of what's been spent on the riverfront, like less than 1%.
Sure.
But the, as you mentioned, the stadiums and the whole development on the riverfront has become a lightning rod and a metaphor for people to vent for what they feel is wrong with local government or how the city and the county is run.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think this will be any different. I think it'll just be an example people will use of why they feel, you know, the city's moving in the wrong direction, because the you can't get more centrally located than the banks and the two stadiums, and it's a symbol for people to project, you know, how they feel about local government.
And I forgot to mention at the top of the episode here that we have two guests today. Scott's here at the first segment talking about the banks, and then our special guests from outside are Nancy and Joe Rossi of fireworks fame, and with the Labor Day fireworks, the uber popular 43rd annual Western and Southern WEBN fireworks show coming up on Labor Day here in Labor Day weekend in Cincinnati. We're having Joe and Nancy Rossi, brother and sister, come in and talk about their company and the history of their company. It's a very fascinating story, a great family story that started originally in Italy with their great-grandfather. So looking forward to chatting with the Rossis about fireworks and all the stuff that they do around that. Switching back to the banks, switching gears, what is the latest, Scott, with the music venue? And I know it's uber political, and there's been people are now starting to question, like, what is going on with the transparency? Can you tell us what the latest is with the moving of Hilltop and what's going on?
Well, it's very interesting because you get two very different stories depending on if you talk to someone with the county or someone with the city. There is still a lot of angst between the two entities on the music venue, where it should locate. But it's still contingent on moving this concrete company that's right by Paul Brown Stadium. And this is all has to do with the Byzantine lease that the Bengals worked out with the county 20 years ago. But basically, the Bengals have demanded that they want this property that this Hilltop Concrete is operating on. So Hilltop needs to move the Queensgate. Now, moving a giant concrete company has so many different facets to it, so many different moving parts.
Environmental stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they want to move on this property that's partly privately owned, but the city owns some of it as well. And it's not quite clear exactly whether the city council will approve this or not, but the mayor certainly is not on board with the city selling this property.
I've talked to a lot of people about this, and I think the general consensus that I've taken away is that Mayor John Cranley, one of the words that was used is being an obstructionist to this, and a lot of people are having a hard time figuring out why. And we all, I think, you know, it's been reported. Scott, you reported on it. Sherry Coolidge, we've been all over the story. Certainly, John Cranley wanted Promo West to be the builder of the Banks concert venue, but when Promo West got tired of what's going on here, they went over to Northern Kentucky, and they've already broken ground over in Newport on the riverbank there. But you know, other than that, still the council and the commissioners approve the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra's concert venue on the banks. And so there's a lot of people that are kind of like, what is John Cranley doing here? You know, we know he was against, he wanted Promo West. We know that. But why continue to fight And, you know, what is his, what's his play here? And honestly, it reminds me a lot of how when Cranley can get dug in, and, you know, when he's adamantly against something, he'll go scorched earth, and he'll try to fight it tooth and nail. And honestly, the way I've heard him fighting behind the scenes on this reminds me very much of how he fought the streetcar, and really somewhat to this day still kind of, you know, is opposed to the streetcar. So any thought on how this is going to go? Do you think this is going to happen? I mean, at the end of the day, Scott, is this, do you see this concert venue happening at the Banks?
I think eventually it will. How long this is going to take to work out, though, I have no idea. I mean, I guess it depends on if there are enough votes on city council to sell this, despite the mayor's objections. Because it seemed like the missive that he sent out last week detailing 10 concerns he has with it. I mean, it was a long letter.
Yeah, I mean, you wrote about that letter,
And it was really hard to sum up because, I mean, they were all over the board. I mean, he talked about how he wanted Promo West. Yep. He mentioned that. I mean, that's – he wanted the Lot 24, a different site on the Banks. He's concerned with the transparency of the deal with the county. So it did not look like he's anywhere near – like, you're right. It looks like he's going to fight tooth and nail. I mean, he didn't say that, but it did not look like he was anywhere close to being brought on board. Whether city council will have enough support to override him, it's up in the air. I mean, it legitimately is up in the air.
I'm getting from having talked to several people at City Hall, I'm getting the sense that it's got six votes. It's going to have six votes or a majority of votes for veto-proof approval for Hilltop to move over to Queensgate and that land swap to happen and for the music venue to move forward. I think the big question right now is whether, and Cranley still has a lot of influence here, is that he controls the agenda. So will he even allow this to go forward on the agenda? That's still a big question. I think we're going to start to maybe see some things when council comes back to session next week after Labor Day. What you're getting ready to say something, Scott?
Well, if there is enough support on council, I think there's enough money and influence behind the music venue. I think at that point it'll go forward. It's just a matter of, I mean, council obviously.
It's a time thing, I think.
Holds the cards. But there is so much momentum and there is a lot of money behind the CSO building this thing.
Yeah.
I think there'll be enough. It's much like the stadiums where. There's a lot of opposition, but there's enough momentum, I think. It will happen. It's just a matter of when.
I want to, before we bring in Joe and Nancy Rossi, Scott, you, along the same lines as the Banks and the concert venues, you wrote a really awesome piece a couple weeks ago. The Northern Kentucky versus Cincinnati, the history, and you got into all the long history and tit for tats between Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati. Awesome in-depth piece, and
I think
it was very conversational. I got a lot of people talking, and what it sparked in my mind is you start to think about right now we're on a course to have two concert venues on each riverfront. We're on a course to have two Ferris wheels on each riverfront. It seems to me like we're not making any progress here.
Mm-hmm.
What?
No, it doesn't. I mean, and I got I had Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati business leaders reach out to me too, blaming the other side. So if anything, it seems to be getting worse. And I don't know if that's a product of. I mean, I think people with the way social media is, people are constantly reading about every issue, every turn of the page, and it just builds from there. That might be the do with it. I don't know, but it definitely seems like everything is a fight now.
It's, I mean, this is going to be. I don't usually worry about what other people on the outside think about us as a region, but if you're coming in from outside or you're looking at Greater Cincinnati, Northern, and Greater Cincinnati includes, when I say that, I include Northern Kentucky, because to me, we are one region. But you hear about regionalism, and I've talked about this on the podcast before, you know, regionalism, schmegionalism, you know, it's like, we're really going to have two Ferris wheels essentially facing each other across the river. We're really going to have two concert venues facing each other across the river, let alone that we already have other concert venues within sort of the same, you know, several block radius with the Taft Theater, the Music Hall. We got U.S. Bank Arena. Scott, it just seems so simple to think, like, why can't leaders over here and leaders over there all come together and say, you know what, Cincinnati, and just let's make it basic. Cincinnati, you guys have the Ferris wheel. You guys go with that. We've already broken ground on the concert venue. We'll go with that. And we can all come out together and take credit for this and hold this up as like an example of positive cooperation, and, you know, maybe even come together and say, you know what, we shouldn't be fighting and over these petty things, and maybe we should all come together on working on, you know, for example, maybe trying to figure out a solution to a new arena, and or maybe even finding a solution to helping people get back and forth between the two riverbanks much easier. We have the South Bank shuttle, but maybe the two could come together and partner on more shuttle service and more cross promotion on what's going on both banks. Is that me just being naive and oversimplifying it, or
it's a matter of, and I asked this, Mayor Cranley wouldn't sit down for an interview for that story, yeah. But I was talking with Covington's mayor, and it's a matter of who makes the first move. And he wasn't willing to do it. He's like, well, the problem's over there. And so it's someone's got to make that first move.
Yeah.
And it's kind of interesting in my story. There was a lot of collaboration around 1900 when you had the boss systems that they're both sides of the river were controlled by strongmen,
mm-hmm.
and it was basically corrupt. And like, if there was going to be a close election, they would send voters across the river to vote illegally. Like, hey, we need some voters to come over here. And under that system, you had a regional streetcar system. The first phone company that started around that time was on both sides of the river. You had a lot of cooperation, but it was very corrupt.
And, yeah.
But now it's very fractionalized. So it's like, who's going to make that first move? Who's going to lead it? And everyone's pointing fingers across the river, and no one's making that first move.
And when that's happening, when the fingers are being pointed and mm-hmm. saying, no, it's them, that gives me very little optimism that anything's going to change.
Yeah, I mean, I can't predict the future, but I don't see. And the reaction I got after that story, it does not look there's still more finger pointing. So,
folks, go back and check. That's a great piece.
Well,
it's in depth. It really goes through the history of this, unfortunately, I hate to say it, rivalry between Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky for over 100 years. And so go Cincinnati.com, just search for Scott Wortman in Northern Kentucky, and the story should pop right up.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, Scott, thanks. We're going to jump to bring in Joe and Nancy Rozzi.
We all can get behind fireworks, though.
Absolutely, we all can.
That does unify. Explosives unify. Can unify the world.
And both Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati come together for the annual Labor Day fireworks.
It's a great event.
And it absolutely is. So thanks, Scott, and we'll jump to the Rozzis.
Well, thank you for having me.
Thanks. Okay, interview time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm really excited today. I love hometown family business stories, and there's none greater than the Rozzi family and what they've done in fireworks and in this region and really across the world. So I want to welcome in Nancy Rozzi and Joe Rozzi. Nancy is the president of Rozzi's Fireworks, and Joe is the vice president of sales for the fireworks company. Brother and sister. fourth generation of family members in a company that started in southern Italy by their great grandfather Paolo. And Nancy, thanks for coming in. Joe, thanks for being here.
Sure, thanks for having us.
You know, I you know, we have you in around the time. This is really a big time. We hear a lot about Rossi's fireworks because of the Labor Day fireworks. The Western Southern WEBN fireworks here in Cincinnati are our big end of the summer bash. But I want to before we jump to that, I really want to talk to you guys about the history of the company and that your great grandfather started this back in southern Italy. And do you know the story of how in the world he got interested in fireworks? And this was back in late 1800s, 1895.
Yeah. Nancy can tell you. Nancy did a lot of research into genealogy.
It was Paolo Rossi. He came here as a young man, actually settled in Newcastle, Pennsylvania at the time, because Newcastle, Pennsylvania apparently had several fireworks companies. And a gentleman there, I don't really know who, but someone must have sent for him to come from Italy to Newcastle because there was work there. Mm-hmm. But I think that it was his father, and his name was Gianni Rossi. I think he started the company in Italy.
Okay.
And so then my great-grandfather Paolo was very young,
yeah,
like in his teens. Must have worked for him. I'm speculating here a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he came over without his family. He came first, I think, in 1895. And then my grandfather, Arthur, mm-hmm. was only 5 years old when he came to this country. And then they started a factory in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, and worked there. And then my grandfather, who was more of the innovator, Arturo, I think he wanted to do his own thing, so they kind of had, you know, words. So my great grandfather Paolo stayed in Newcastle, and my grandfather, who was now I guess older, in the 30s, in 1930s, came to Cincinnati to do a show at Coney Island.
Okay.
So our history with Coney Island goes back to like early 30s. And finally came to Cincinnati because he got a contract to do 10 nights at Coney Island. So prior to that time, he traveled all around the country. He would put up a factory, make fireworks, then move on. He just kind of like lived on the edge. He just put his foot over the toe, took the toe over the edge, and it was that kind of a person. So moved around a lot and then finally settled in and our place in Loveland, and we had that place from 1930 to, 2008?
2009
we moved.
But you're still in Loveland.
We're still in Loveland. Yeah. We have an office in Loveland. Mm-hmm. We have a store, and we have our facility in Wilmington, Ohio.
So then is there still a family company back in Newcastle, Pennsylvania as well?
No. Okay. No. Okay. In 1944, I believe my great-grandfather died, mm-hmm. and then it was sold and kind of disappeared. And it's kind of hard to find the train of all of that because all the relatives have passed away. I have a cousin who still lives there. And, you know, I've done research over the years, but it's just kind of it's going to take a little more than me going on Ancestry to find out what happened.
You don't have to go to Newcastle and find out.
Yeah.
Yeah, see if there's archives. So.
Yeah.
So, and now here you are, fourth generation. Was it expected of you guys are both, you have seven kids in your family, or you guys are two of seven children.
Yeah.
Was it expected from a young age that you would become a pyrotechnician? Because it was funny as right before we started recording that I was trying to get your guys' title right, and Nancy just says, we're all pyrotechnicians. So,
well, I think that certainly not me as a woman was ever even considered to be in that position.
Yeah.
The boys, maybe, and there were three boys. But we all were helped during summers, all of us. Mm-hmm. We had a retail store, so that's kind of where I spent most of my time when I was young, still do. And it was just, you know, it's a family business. You have to go help your dad. That's kind of the whole,
you know. I think that if he had it his way, we probably would have done something else.
Really?
Dad? Yeah.
I don't know. He liked having us around.
He liked having us around. Yeah. He did. He liked knowing that we were there. He liked, but it's a dangerous.
Yeah.
It was a hard occupation.
And that's, I think that's what concerned him. But, you know, we got to spend, I got to work with him all the time. You know, Nancy was in the office and in the
store. My whole life, basically. Yeah.
She's been there longer than I have.
I've got 50-something years in this sort of thing. So.
Yeah. Really?
Yes.
So you just went, you worked there in the summers growing up and then?
13, I think I started. And I guess Joe was, you know, he was the same, 12, 13 years old.
Yeah, started cutting grass.
And you couldn't, you know, it was okay back
then. Knocking on the door, come on, summertime, summer vacation, Dad's knocking on the door, let's go to work. And I go to work with him.
Yeah. Small business and family-owned business and that value of work that you guys learned from a young age from your father and your family business. Can you just share like what, you know, what are some of the things that people can learn from doing that?
From working every day?
I mean, just the fact that from working a family business and, You from a young age, you saw your family members working hard to make this company successful. Did you feel like it was incumbent upon you that you continue on that tradition and even pass that down to the next generation?
I kind of felt that. I mean, but I think you learn a lot from the accomplishments that and the achievements and getting something done. You know, watching Dad go to work every day till he was in his 80s. He's 83 years old. And he could have done anything he wanted, but he kept going to work. Now, if it rained, he wouldn't. If it was snowy, he wouldn't. But
I don't know. He just felt responsible for everybody. He was a very responsible man and very humble. And so he didn't take that work so seriously, like, you know, like someone would talk to him because he was so humble about what he did. And I remember having a conversation with him and my daughter as well. We wanted him to write a story about, you know, and he just like, it's like, what?
About
who wants
the family
to,
history.
Who wants to hear about this? It wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah.
But I think that's we all felt responsible to look after him. I mean, I know I did.
Yeah.
Because I know he worked so hard and he was such a caring man and he didn't really, he demanded us to work, but he had pride in it and the pride he had, we had it. So that kind of carries over into how we do things. You know, you don't send anything out of here unless it's right.
Yeah.
That's the kind of attitude he had.
Yeah, you don't do it unless it's right. You don't do it. You give it your all. Your name's on it.
Yeah.
You know, anything that has to do with fireworks in this city is our name's on it.
Yep.
So we're out in the community. We participate with, you know, the Reds and big organizations that expect the same thing.
Absolutely,
it's a tough act to follow. But
was it your dad who named you his successor as the president?
No, well, there's a interesting story about that. We had a little bit of a breakup in the family 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And my older brother and my other brother decided they didn't really want to be in the family business anymore. Mm-hmm. They wanted to kind of be on their own. So it just kind of fell in my lap. It was never supposed to be me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I kind of like put my big girl pants on and decided that I was, you know, well, maybe I can do this. But, you know, with Joe and Michael, certainly, we kind of like... It was hard for the first couple of years, but actually I'm so very proud of what we three have accomplished in the last 10 years.
And Michael is
Is my nephew.
Your nephew.
My sister Paula, it's her son, gotcha. Michael Lutz. Yeah. And Michael's been doing a lot of the designing of the international shows. And so we kind of spread our wings out. We became partners with an Italian firm, and that partnership helped us get shows around the world. And then my special love is the competitions that we've been in the last few years. So
yeah,
I'm very, very proud of that. And if I had to leave my mark, if I had to leave tomorrow, I would say that's one of the things that I wanted to accomplish during the, like, I don't know, 8 years I've been president. So,
and you're coming off having won, just won a major international award at the, is it, can you, is it in France?
It's in every year in Cannes and the French Riviera. It's called the Festival d'Art Pyrotechnique. There are, I think six countries?
I think so.
Six countries who compete over a period of a month. And our date was August the 15th. And the interesting thing about the show is that, and I was able to help on this one, and I was very, very excited. Mm-hmm. You have to work at night. You can't work during the day.
Right. So it's by a heliport that operates daily. So it's shut down at night. So you go to work at 8 p.m. and we worked at 7 or 8 in the morning.
I was so anxious about it. I didn't think I'd be able to do it. But, you know, there were 10 of us all together, four from the United States from our team, and then we had six from our partner company, Panzera, and we worked all through the night. At 6:30, they threw us off, and we had to leave.
Yeah.
And we got a little bit of sleep, and then we had to come back and do it over again. It was a very, very large show. And the thrill, I can't tell you the thrill of me watching that from the beach on the Riviera was like,
oh my!
I wish I could just keep that feeling in me. And I was thinking about it on the way down here, and I thought to myself, was I in the moment enough? Can I remember it for the rest of my life?
Yeah,
it was a thrill. And then to win the jury award was even, it was.
Yeah,
just,
there's two awards.
There's two.
Top finishes.
Two top, and I believe they're judged on different things, but we won the jury award, which allows us to come back in 4 years to compete again.
Okay.
Yeah,
so then you, Rozzy, was representing America.
Yes.
You were American.
Yes, USA.
And I wish we had video. I wish we had video with our podcast, because I would love for people to see your smile, Nancy. I can just, you're just beaming with pride, and I can just tell. And then you've also, talking about sticking with the international theme, you're judging competitions around the world as well.
Well, I was asked to judge one competition and
in Moscow,
a very,
right?
Very big one, very well organized. 8 countries compete, 4 on Friday night, or was it Saturday? 4 on one night, 4 on the next night. Companies from all over the world. There was Italy, Portugal, Pakistan, which was a new thing for me. I'd never seen any fireworks from Pakistan. Canada, there was a French team. Oh, I can't remember the other two. The winners, the first three were, Russia.
Yeah, Russia.
Russia competed. They came in first.
Yeah.
Duh. And then it was Portugal and then Italy. So all the shows were varied. And last year we competed as well. We came in third. Rozzy's came in third.
Yeah.
And then they asked me to judge the festival, and they're just so wonderful, the people over there. I was just so taken by them. And yeah, I just loved every minute of it.
You were quoted in the, you told an Associated Press reporter after you were the judge in this competition, you said, quote, and this reporter asked you, like, what makes a winning show? And you said, quote, if the fireworks and music work together in harmony and move me, then they have won me.
Yeah. That's really good. He caught me as he was from the Associated Press, and I didn't know what he was going to ask me, but I guess I had been thinking about it as a judge, because there were several criteria of points that you give a show.
Yeah.
And each one was worth 10 points. But the emotional connection between the audience and you is basically what pushes the show over the edge and wins. You know, but then there's all kinds of different things, accuracy and, you know, if things were working properly and that kind of thing. But I think we did good. There were 5 of us judging, and we all kind of chose the same.
So if you could have the most amazing pyrotechnic show in the sky, but if the music is off, it stinks.
No, it doesn't work.
Look at it from the point of view of a designer, somebody designing the show, and the music. I mean, it's got to move us in order to put our thing out there. It's got to be. If it can move me, or if it can move Mike, and then we can. So when you do a competition, that's your music. That's not someone else is producing a themed event, and this is what I want you to shoot fireworks to. So we get to do our own thing.
Gotcha.
So we're going to do something that's going to be important to us, that moves us, that has some sort of significance, and hoping that everybody else feels the same way. But then we get to put fireworks with it.
So
it would almost be better if you had a great fireworks show with great fireworks. And that's a very important thing.
Absolutely.
The great fireworks, because in Cannes, we were able to buy some of the most beautiful shells from southern Italy that I've ever seen.
Really?
In comparison to what we used to make. And it would, as I say, it would almost be better if you, to not have music, than to have music that wasn't good, because the music is going to detract from what you're seeing if it's not a good soundtrack. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, that...
There was a time when there wasn't musically choreographed displays, and it's a different element, but to be able to produce a show without music and make it exciting with very high quality, good product, you can do that.
Yeah, you can do that.
And then, so this is the 43rd... annual Western Southern WEBN fireworks, Labor Day fireworks here in Cincinnati, our big end of summer send off into yucky cold late fall and winter. Rozzy's has been doing this all. This is your 43rd year. That's been going on 43 years. Yeah. 1977. Joe, you were a little guy then, 10 years old. Do you remember going to the first?
I don't think we did the first couple. But now, because it was a barge show. It was a show.
One barge,
and it was, they played music and they shot fireworks, and it was kind of put together. She remembers the phone call that came.
Yeah, I got the call
from Frank Wood.
Yeah, he called the office.
I wanted to do it. I don't think there was any event permits or anything like that that first year, and then and who knew that it was going to continue to evolve. So when I got involved in 89 or 90, setting it up and taking care of the arrangements, and it's just snowballed into more and more and more. So this is probably 30 for me.
When you talk about music, do you guys, do you produce the music? Do you have the music with the show, or someone else picks the music?
It's produced by another gentleman that works for iHeart. I think he's out of Cleveland. His name's Miles.
But then you guys all team together and...
They give us drafts.
Okay.
We get drafts of the soundtrack, and then we finally get a completed soundtrack.
You said one barge. You still shoot three. The fire. It's now three barges.
Yeah,
and
three.
How many people does it take?
We were just having that conversation,
this morning.
To pull off the show.
So there's 10 or 12 of us on the barge, sometimes up to 15 for the week.
Yeah.
And then the goal is to complete the barges by Friday, so those crews move up to both bridges. We have one day on each bridge. So the night of show, there's almost 30 people in various locations.
Gotcha.
You know, we got a couple of surprise locations that...
Is it all then automated on the show night, or is it...
Yeah.
There's some, okay.
Yeah, the audio track has a time code track attached to it, and it's basically a digital clock, and that gets broadcast out to our systems.
Okay.
So all the systems are synced together via that time code track.
Gotcha.
So anything can be fired from anywhere.
So it's not like there's someone manually lighting each firework.
No, it's all electrically fired,
Is it all, when did that change?
So I think it was fired electrically from the very beginning. But it was a push button system.
Okay,
you know, just a simple little pushing buttons and with a stopwatch, and you know, we're going to shoot this for 2 minutes. This lasts 3 minutes. This lasts X minutes, and then it got a little more sophisticated to where there was a recorded voice track that would a voice saying fire, you know, when to fire something, and then digitally, full digital was probably 94, 95, I think.
I don't know.
Right around that. And then that went on for a number of years. It's still the same way, but then design changed. The biggest change was being able to do a simulation.
Gotcha.
So we're using some visual simulation software now. And it's close. It's mm-hmm. close enough that it can really, really let us give us an idea of what it's going to look like. This is what it kind of changed everything. Mm-hmm. So I was old school. So, okay, we've got this thing, we've got that thing, and I'm going to shoot it here and shoot this here. And that's what it's supposed to look like here. Now I can see it.
And now you can get so detailed, so incredibly detailed.
And tenth of a second and, precision.
You know, you can see things moving back and forth and complex. And, it's, you know, you see some of the shows that are out in the world, the more complex they are, the better they are. And they're the ones that are winning, you know.
More exciting. Awards. It's more exciting. It's okay, what's, you know, what you want to do is capture someone and keep them on the edge of their seat. What's going to happen next? Did you see that? Oh, my God. What's happening next? And I think we've been able to do that with this show.
You guys, we see you. I mean, you can see Rozzy's fireworks daily and throughout the summer here. You do Kings Island. Mm-hmm. You have obviously the Labor Day, the Reds games. So anytime you hit a home run, that's a Rozzy firework that goes up. Reds hit a home run, that is. All kinds of suburban shows on 4th of July and throughout the summer, Canada. But when it comes to when we think of Rozzy, we think of Labor Day. Is this, do you see this as your pinnacle event? And Joe, I know there was a story you want to tell me about this. So.
Yeah, I do. It was about 15 years ago or so. Well, maybe longer. We moved into a new house up in the northern suburb, and we met our neighbors mm-hmm. down at the end of the street. And this guy, you would have cookouts and stuff. And we were over there at the beginning of the summer one year. And they were chatting. School was just getting out, and they were talking about their vacation plans. They were talking about, you know, visiting his parents in Florida. And then the question, well, what are you doing for the fireworks? And I was, what do you mean, what are you doing for the fireworks? Well, yeah, what are we going to – so that's a thing.
Yeah.
So that was the thing with these people. They had grown up with it.
Uh-huh.
So it was, it was kind of interesting. And it's still, even when I tell the story, the hair stands on the back of my neck. And then a few years ago, we were approached by a lady who used to go to the show with her dad. That was their thing from the mid-80s all the way up until just a few years ago when he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And she reached out and said, hey, you know, my father passed away. This was our thing. Just the two of them went.
Mm-hmm.
So realizing that this is a thing for people, it's not just a, you know, a crazy fireworks show with a rock and roll soundtrack at the end of the summer. It's a family tradition for our family to their family. It's a tradition.
Yep. So this is memories.
It is. That and all the memories we've got from it. And we're getting ready to embark on another.
When my parents were alive, my mother would have a party after the fireworks. Party. We would rent out the top floor of
the Riverview, the Round Riverview, Hotel across the river.
The Quality Inn at the time.
The Round Hotel.
We used to rent the top floor out. There were like, I don't know, 10 rooms or 12 rooms. The whole family was up there. We'd leave our doors open. The kids would be running around the circle.
Mm.
And then we'd have a party afterward. And
is that where you would watch the fireworks from?
No, my mother would.
Okay.
My mother would never go down to the river. She would stay in the room and she would pray to St. Joseph.
Yeah,
she was
everything would be okay.
She'd
come down to the barge. She'd
come down with holy water.
Just for safety and just praying for safety.
Just, you know, because her whole family was out there. So, you know, her husband, her children.
Yeah.
So she would never go down to the river, but we would. We watched it. The first show in 1977, I was on the top deck of the Barleycorn's boat by myself.
Okay.
I don't think anybody came. And then over the years, we've watched it mostly from the Kentucky side.
Okay.
And the station has been generous enough to allow our family to watch it from there.
Okay.
over the years. So.
I've been on the barge since 1989.
So
I couldn't watch. I wouldn't want to watch it.
He's
from
on the barge.
Else.
I'm on the. I'm watching it.
There, yeah,
I'm the critic.
Sure,
because really, I mean, it's you're at a point where you're really you're a spectator. Right, you're mostly in.
Yeah, it's a little bit of an exciting hour and a half.
Yeah, so, right.
No, there's a number of things that are happening. I hardly ever get to watch the show. It's
okay.
It's washing our barge, making sure we're lined up. I've got two guys on each bridge that are telling me if we're drifting. The tug operator wants to look up and he's watching and hey, come on back.
He's
down
hearing
to earth.
It. It's not so much.
I'm hearing it and watching stuff come down and listening to see, you know, for any issues or any problems. We have a safety guy right next to us who informs us if there's any issues that may affect the show or we may have to. So it's a pretty exciting hour and a half.
I want to ask you. You said you have a facility in Wilmington. Is that where you? Forgive me for my lack of knowledge on fire. Is that where you test and make your fireworks?
We make a little bit of product there, very little, but that's where we stage all of our displays. So this product has to get assembled into its various displays, and that's where it all happens. That's where our equipment is. So around the 4th of July, you'll see this facility out in the middle of Wilmington, out in the middle of nowhere, with 50 Ryder trucks. That's how we manage our 4th of July. So, it's 110 acres because of the amount of material that we have to store there.
Yeah.
We need the distance to inhabited structures. So,
you do a lot of testing?
We'll test out there and,
Are you basically doing art? Like, are you trying new? Again, forgive me. Like, do you try new formulas of fireworks? Like, how does that all work out? Or do you buy that from somewhere else? Or
right now, that's happening in our factory in Italy, the factory that we partnered with.
Yeah.
So a lot of the research is going on there to tweak their formulas. So we're taking our formulas, we're merging them with their techniques and kind of making it better, and then it's given us access to these other smaller facilities around the southern part of Italy that everyone specializes in something different. So our language is so unique to tell you about it would be like, well, what's that mean? Well, this guy's colors are this. This guy's ghost shells were really nice. So this guy's willow is this.
Yeah,
their multiple break shells are spectacular. So everyone has a different, and it gave us access to all of those different facilities. And these are sometimes 5 and 10 people.
Did the fact that your family is originally from Italy, did that help with your connection to this company in Italy?
A few years ago, since we also reproduce the Fire Up the Night fireworks competition that's held in Coney in September.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep.
So we have invited companies from all over the world, and one year, and we knew the company. The company over there is Panzera SRL. Mm-hmm. We know them. We've known them, and we brought them to Cincinnati in 2013. And so, when they visited us, I remember having the conversation. I don't know, with Mike or Joe or whatever, and we were talking about fireworks and getting good fireworks and. And I mentioned to Mike, and I said, Mike, why don't just try to buy them? Let's buy them out. Mm-hmm. I think the Mr. Panzera, Giovanni Panzera, was kind of at the same age as my father, and he passed away. Mm-hmm. He passed away in 2000, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the company was run by his nephew, and they had a great name in fireworks. Mr. Panzera was the inspiration for Cannes, the competition, as well as the inspiration for Montreal. He was the one behind all of these. And that was like almost 40 years ago Cannes started. So great man, great, great producer of fireworks, and great name in Italy. So we just kind of went from there. We started talking to them and became really good friends. And it just kind of like blossomed into... Oh, we love their fireworks now. Mm-hmm. Now we have fireworks that are made in Italy that are similar to what we made, but not quite the same.
They're getting to a place where they're making product that we spec.
Go ahead.
That's what basically stuff that we used to make.
Yeah, and so when you're trying something new, is it ever Nancy, Joe? Does the family then gather around you? Shoot it off, check it out, and then do you guys all essentially yay or nay? And I'm thinking back to our interview a couple months ago with Grater's Ice Cream CEO, one of the family members would create, go in the lab and create some new taste, and then he would bring it to the board meeting, I believe on Tuesday, and share little spoonfuls of it around, and they would say, yeah, this is a good one, we're going to try it, and no, this stinks, and we're... it's never going
to. Sort of. So Mike travels to Italy quite often. I've been over there once with him, and they'll look at stuff. He'll send me video. What do you think of this? What do you think of that? What do you think of this?
They'll be testing over there.
And then product will come over, and we'll just kind of, or I'll ask him, I said, why don't you see if they can make this or see if they can make that? And it might take them a couple of months, and they'll come up with it, and then we'll get a shipment in, and yeah, that's it. Yeah. So then we shoot it. So we're not like, it's not like we're inviting, hey, everybody come on up to the farm. We're going to test it.
No, we don't do that.
We're just, we put it out there on a show. We know, okay, what we want to make sure is it's going to work okay. Mm-hmm. Then how's it look? And you see a lot of that stuff pop up on some shows, especially this River show.
Gotcha.
You're going to see a lot of new things on this at this show.
Oh, we are.
It'll be a lot of interesting stuff.
any hints?
No, absolutely not. No, that's the mystique I've been going by for years, and I'm going to keep it up.
Yeah, I mean the entire can show was product that was made at the factory.
Okay.
There was nothing Chinese. I'm pretty sure there wasn't anything Chinese.
It's nice because, again, the industry, like many industries in this country, was taken over by China. And it's fireworks are labor intensive. They're dangerous. They're dirty. And in order to keep up with the demand, you'd have to employ a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
They're more set up for it. So, but it started getting somewhat generic. Now, don't get me wrong. There's some really good factories in China that turn out some very good product, and we buy from a few of those because even they specialize in their own thing. So it's a matter of having diversity as to where your product comes from or what you're making. Making everything ourselves would probably limit us, and we'd be doing people a disservice. But bringing in product from our factory in Italy, from other factories in Italy, some Chinese material gives you a wide palette.
Gotcha.
And that's what we try to do.
If you're just an individual, I know there are a lot of state laws and restrictions on just individuals setting off their own fireworks, but there are some things that you can get. And do you guys, could I just come to your facility in Loveland and buy some things for my little backyard?
You can come to the retail store.
Yeah,
you can buy fireworks and you can take them out of state for use.
That's right. Yes, right, out of state. Yes, Kentucky and Indiana.
Ohio is very close to changing that rule.
Yeah, we just it's come around. It has. Yeah, it's come up.
Do you think that will, if the state were to pass, will that dramatically change your business? Do you think or?
Honestly, I don't think so.
I'm not sure. Yeah. It's not a big part of our business.
Right.
It's a small part of it. I think it'll change the way fireworks are looked at in Ohio. I mean, it's happening.
Yeah.
You know? So why not make it a little bit more regulated and make it a little bit more controlled and grab a little bit of the market? But it's a touchy subject.
Yeah.
So
there
are times when it's real popular and people are like, why aren't we legalizing? I think we have a local state rep that was pushing a bill over the past couple years, and we've heard it before too. It's happened over the past 20 or 30 years, and then it just kind of gets tabled somewhere.
It sounds
and then it
like
comes
it's
up
getting
again.
Close. So
it's getting closer.
Yeah. Well, the quality when the laws were made, when fireworks were outlawed, the quality of the fireworks was certainly not even close to where they are now. So,
and they were much bigger, believe it or not. So you could get, I mean, cherry bombs, silver salutes, all those things had a large amount of flash powder. They were dangerous. They could blow your hand off. Absolutely. Mm. but it changed over the years, and those were outlawed. And then firecrackers came in, and much smaller, much safer. Quality control has been much better.
Yeah, and they're so much better.
Yeah.
Packaged better. Marketing is better. They're like 100% better than they used to be. And I remember because I was selling them back in those days.
Yeah.
You'd get a box and the powder was leaking out of it.
You had to
clay
go through everything and be careful with it.
Not anymore. The quality is really
much
good.
Better.
Yeah. For your retail store, you're out on Loveland Madeira Road, and also Rozzi, R-O-Z-Z-I, fireworks.com. There's some great stuff on there. It shows where all the events you do. You even do private events. You'll do weddings.
Yep.
And
absolutely, we'll do a wedding.
Oh, I had one other question.
Absolutely.
One other question.
Call us in January.
That's what I asked you. What is what do you do in the wintertime?
We're shooting through the end of the year. Yeah,
We may stop shooting in January.
January, February is preparing for the following 4th of July.
So
we start getting ready for the 4th of July a year before almost. I mean, we're looking at what products do we need to bring in.
So you're already looking for 4th of July 2020.
Yeah, so my father used to say that the people in fireworks industry work 364 days a year for the 4th of July.
Nancy, Joe, this has been great. Thanks so much for taking the time to come in and share your story. And we're looking forward to the fireworks, your wonderful, top-notch fireworks show this weekend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again to Scott Wortman in our first segment and then Joe and Nancy Rozzi for coming in. Absolutely love that story. Not only is it great to have them in to talk fireworks ahead of Labor Day, but also when you think of Labor Day and you think of that, this is a day where we take pride in America, in the work culture that we have in this country. And small businesses are so important and such the backbone of the economy in this country. And the Rozzi family, it really epitomizes a great small business success story. One thing we did not talk about, and I meant to ask them about it, but part of the Rozzi legacy in Cincinnati is the fact that the absolute first Major League Baseball night game, which took place on May 24th, 1935 at Crosley Field in Cincinnati, the Rozzi family set off the fireworks after the game that night. So just another chapter in their history here in Cincinnati. And that wasn't in 1935. That wasn't long after the family established their business here in Greater Cincinnati. So thanks again to the Rozzis, and definitely check out the Labor Day weekend fireworks here in Cincinnati. Speaking of Labor Day, I love this holiday because it's just a chance to take a breather and from work, but also to reflect on work and how important work is to our economy, obviously, and our culture in this country. And when I think about it, the one thing that I love to share is that I come from working people, and my dad was he's retired now, but he was a foreman in a electrical power plant back home in Gallipolis, Ohio, Kiger Creek power plant on the Ohio River. And I always think of my dad on this day because I still remember growing up, like he worked there over 35 years, but for the first really 20 years, half of his time there almost, he worked in the coal yard. And I remember my dad coming home after work just completely covered in coal dust, head to toe, just black, dust all over his clothes. And I just think about how that just set a foundation for my two younger brothers and I, and Cole put food on the table and put us through college, and So what that's what Labor Day means to me is I think about my dad and people like my dad who are out there working, you know, manual labor jobs and who aren't getting, you know, are doing it and they're not making headlines and they're going out there and just doing it for their families. And there are millions and millions of people in this country who are doing that. And with the economy going strong right now, there are more people doing that currently. So you think about where we were 10, 12 years ago with the recession. And so this is, you know, it's a time to reflect and step back. And so I want to say to all those folks out there who have family members or are people who work in factories and work in those jobs who, you know, delivering mail and driving trucks and working in coal yards and sweeping coal dust off boiler decks. Just want to say thank you to all those folks. Sherry, let's switching gears, jumping out here. Sherry's back next week. You know, my not much of a that so Cincinnati moment, other than my last weekend was incredibly so Cincinnati. My wife and two sons, we went to the banks, we rode the Ferris wheel, hung out at Smale Riverfront Park, and then on Sunday, my buddy Matt Bremer and I went to the FC Cincinnati game. So a quintessential Cincinnati weekend. Get out there and enjoy the weather. I hope everybody gets out and enjoys the Labor Day fireworks and get downtown and check out the restaurants. Things are going really well in Cincinnati right now. So last thing, thanks so much for listening. Our listenership keeps going up and up and up. Tell your friends, share on Twitter, on Facebook. Let me know your feedback, good, bad, indifferent. We want to improve. We want to make this podcast better for you. So let me know. My email is jwilliams@enquirer.com. jwilliams@enquirer.com. Check out cincinnati.com, our latest subscription. For those of you who subscribe, thank you, thank you, thank you. Right now, I think we're running the first 30 days for free on our digital all-access digital subscription. So please consider supporting local journalism. Which this podcast is all a part of, and we can't do it without your support. So thank you so much. Looking forward to having Sherry back next week. Have a fun, safe, happy Labor Day. Thank you.